Yes, good morning to you. How are you? Hope you're well. Sunday, is it 19th? It is the 19th of February 2017. My name is Richie Allen. This is Sunday View, of course, brought to you in association with davidicke.com/headlines. We're live, of course, 11 a.m. GMT. Don't ordinarily give out the time, but we are live. As usual, you can tweet this programme. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. You can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. It's going to be a big show, this. Going to be looking at the Sunday broadsheet front pages. One or two of the tabloids as well. Massive story in the Sunday Mail today, which has implications for davidicke.com, David Icke himself, for everybody who's ever read David's books and attended one of his talks. Let's crack on with it then. Keep the Twitter handle handy. Do tell me what you're thinking. This is Sunday View.
For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com.
Marvellous stuff. Had a lovely afternoon yesterday in Chester, the lovely city, town. I suppose you should say city, shouldn't you? Because it's got a wonderful cathedral town with the future Mrs. Allen. Can't recommend it enough. Been there a couple of times on the train over the last couple of years. It was lovely to drive there yesterday, not be under any pressure. Had a lovely time, beautiful weather. And I must mention this, we don't normally give out free advertisements on our live shows, but I'm going to do it because it's warranted. If you're ever in Chester, there is a wonderful French restaurant there called La Petite France. And La Petite France is, it's like a bistro run by a French couple, which always helps, doesn't it? It always helps. And they serve beautiful French cuisine, home cooked. And the best part about it is, it's affordable. What's affordable, Richie? Well, I'll tell you, for two courses, every lunchtime, Monday to Saturday, two courses sets you back $11.95. Yes, $11.95. So that's a choice of four starters, a choice of four main courses, $11.95 ahead. And their wine list is lovely. And their house wine, I think, is about £13 a bottle. Now, I was driving, so I wasn't overdoing the wine. But it's just a wonderful place. And if you happen to be passing through Chester and you want to have something to eat, the welcome is lovely. French guy who runs it, his name is Fred. Obviously fluent in English. Lovely. I can't say more about it than that. Great, great fun, great time yesterday. So then, yes, it is Sunday, February 19th, 2017. I am Richie Allen. This is your Sunday View. Do bookmark davidicke.com/headlines. And let me point out, much of what I talk about today is covered in depth at David's headlines page, particularly the biggest story of the day, which I'm going to come to now in a second. 3 minutes past the hour. We are, of course, also broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, fabradiointernational.com. Embrace the alternative. Wonderful, wonderful schedule of programmes, completely untainted by the nonsense of mainstream media. Great stuff. Check out Fab Radio as well. So let's have a look at the front pages of the Sunday newspapers. And we're going to go to the Sunday Mail straight away and to undoubtedly the biggest story of the day. The screaming headline on the front page of the Mail is this: Police Chief Heath was a paedophile. Massive headline. Police Chief Heath was a paedophile. So I'm going to read you a couple of paragraphs and see what you think of this. The police chief investigating claims that Sir Edward Heath was a paedophile is convinced the allegations are, quote, 120% genuine, the Mail on Sunday can reveal. More than 30 people have come forward with claims of sexual abuse by the former Conservative Prime Minister, according to well-placed sources. And they are said to have given strikingly similar accounts of incidents to Wiltshire Police, even though the individuals are not known to each other. The Mail on Sunday has been told that Wiltshire Chief Constable Mike Veal regards the allegations as, quote, totally convincing, end quote, and plans to publish a report in June. We can't wait for that, can we, dear listener? Now, the Mail continues, the Mail on Sunday continues. Detectives have established that, contrary to claims that Sir Edward could not have committed the crimes as he never drove a car and always had a police driver with him, he did drive and did have a car. Contrary to claims he couldn't have committed the crimes as he never drove and always had a police driver with him, he did in fact drive and did in fact have a car. The Mail continues, they have photographic evidence showing he is a driver and have established that he had a driving licence. He also bought a Rover 2000 after being deposed as Conservative leader by Margaret Thatcher in 1975 when he was 58. Astonishingly, Mr. Veal is also understood to support claims that Sir Edward's alleged crimes were reported to police years ago but covered up by the establishment. Some of those who said Sir Edward abused them are believed to have told police they went on to commit sexual abuse crimes themselves as a result. The investigation into Sir Edward called Operation Conifer was set up in 2015 in the wake of the Jimmy Savile scandal. Mr. Veal came under pressure to abandon the inquiry last year after separate claims of a paedophile ring at Westminster involving former Home Secretary the late Lord Britton and former Defence Chief Lord Bramall were found to be groundless. And before I read on, the allegations about Bramall may very well be groundless. We talked at length about Bramall and about how those who are trying to protect paedophiles were accusing innocent people of paedophilia in order to muddy the waters. However, Leon Britton was certainly a notorious serial abuser of children. There's no doubt about that. Now, the Mail continues. Allegations that Heath was involved in satanic orgies have been dismissed as fantasy by an expert asked to review the case. Which expert? However, the Mail on Sunday has been told that Veal believes the paedophile allegations are genuine, and the source said, to repeat, Veal believes them in them 120% and thinks they are totally convincing. How extraordinary. How extraordinary. Now, my friend, the man with whom this programme is made in conjunction with, David Icke, was the first researcher ever to go public and reveal that Edward Heath was a paedophile and child killer. Now, of course, again today, the Sunday Mail hasn't extended David the courtesy of an acknowledgement. And this is not in any way sycophancy. When will the establishment media acknowledge David Icke and his role in uncovering elite paedophile networks and David's role in naming guys like Heath when they were alive? When will they acknowledge it? And of course the answer is they never will, because God forbid. I've been speaking to Caroline, the future Mrs. Allen, about this today in days gone by, because if they were to credit David Icke, it might just encourage people to say, hang on, wasn't he a nutter? I must go and buy one of his books. On Tuesday next, that's 2 days from now, David's going to be on the programme talking about this and more. But back in 2014, we did a show, a two-hour special, talking about the scale of paedophilia worldwide. It's on our YouTube channel, and it's on David's YouTube channel as well. It's been downloaded and watched over a million times. This was David talking to me in 2014 about calling Heath a paedophile, while importantly, Heath was still alive.
I put together an enormous catalogue of information documentation in that period, and I came home. And what had been happening in this country is I was starting to meet people in this synchronistic way I talked about. And a name that kept coming up when I was talking to people who said they'd been abused and they'd been involved in satanic ritual was Ted Heath, Prime Minister of Britain from, was it 1970, 74, the man who took us into the European Union, as it's now called. And what I do, Rich, is people give me information, and I don't just blurt it out and say, this is what's going on. I put it on the back burner, as I call it, and I let it simmer. and I see what else comes. And eventually there comes a point where you've got so much information pointing to the same thing and the same people from so many different sources. You meet that point where you think, I'm confident of going with this now. And so when The Biggest Secret came out, I said that in it that Ted Heath, who was still an MP and didn't die until 7 years after the book came out, that he was a serial paedophile. My good, serial paedophile, are you having a laugh? Stunning. A child killer, a child torturer. Within days of the book coming out, a journalist of what passes for one rang Ted Heath and read the passage to him. 7 years before he died, he could have stopped me by going to court there and then. Nothing. Nothing. All he said is that David Icke must be mad. And then and nothing happened. And what's happened, of course, since the Jimmy Savile thing, which we'll get into, is that other people are now naming Ted Heath and his connections to Jimmy Savile, who is a record-breaking paedophile. Yes, but as we'll get to, a record-breaking child procurer for the rich and famous as well, which is why he was so close to the royal family and so close to the Thatcher government.
I can't recommend The Biggest Secret highly enough. I really can't. It's a vital, vital book in David's, I suppose, extensive canon now, extensive library. You've got to read that book to understand what was going on in the 1970s, in the 1980s. It was an incredibly brave book at the time. And that's it sounds like a throwaway line now. It sounds like it's an easy thing to say that. It was a brave book. It was a courageous book. It was a book that could have finished David. He had to be absolutely meticulously briefed and researched in what he put into that book. Otherwise, he was finished. You know, I recommend if you haven't read it, go and buy it. If you can't afford to buy a copy of it, borrow a copy of it. Somebody said to me recently, The Biggest Secret was in a local library somewhere. I think it was somewhere in Yorkshire. I wouldn't be surprised. Read the book. This is an extraordinary thing today. Because remember, and I suggest that you listen tomorrow to radio stations like LBC, Leading Britain's Conversation, what a load of tosh, and establishment stooges like James O'Brien and Nick Ferrari. These were the guys, remember, that in the last 18 months were screaming bloody murder that all of this stuff about former prime ministers was complete fantasy, conspiracy theory, fake news, if you will. Listen to these people tomorrow morning. And first of all, it'll be interesting to see whether they deal with the allegations made in the Mail on Sunday today by the policeman Veal. And if they do, what will they say about it? How will they cover it? Now, former barrister and intelligence expert Michael Shrimpton confirmed to me on several shows, not only on the Richie Allen radio show, but also on the television show he made in London, that David Icke was absolutely on the money about Edward Heath.
As a barrister, I use words with advisedly, with care. Ted Heath, I've never suggested Heath himself murdered any of the boys that he abused. And he was abusing boys down to about the age of 14. Other people on the boat, on the crew, murdered the boys and threw them overboard. Their bodies weighted down by chains.
Where, Michael? Where was this taking place?
This was taking place around in the waters around the Channel Islands. The boys were picked up from Hope de la Ragin nursing home, a children's home in Jersey, which itself was an old Abwehr facility. There's a strong connection between German intelligence and Hope de la Ragin. It was used by German intelligence in World War II. Heath, who was working for the Germans, is taking boys on board Morning Cloud, particularly Morning Cloud 4. There were several Morning Clouds. They were brought to him by Jimmy Savile. Savile was running a paedophile ring with the protection of the Cabinet Office, partly because the Cabinet Secretary, John Hunt, was also a paedophile. Savile and other members of the ring were supplying boys to John Hunt, the Cabinet Secretary, and to Heath, and to other senior figures.
In the 1960s, now, Michael?
Oh, no, we're going...
Into the 70s now.
Oh, yeah, this was going on when a friend of mine, the late Vice Admiral Sir Louis Le Bailey, who was Director General of Intelligence at the Ministry of Defence. This was still going on. The missing children, and for the avoidance of doubt, we're talking about dozens of kids going missing. There's no doubt that we've got missing kids. There are no bodies. The police in Jersey thought the bodies might be buried in the grounds of the children's home. Well, they weren't. The bodies have never been discovered because they're thrown overboard. So we've got several dozen missing kids. These kids are picked up from Haute-Garenne by Saville and an accomplice. The accomplice is still alive, so I won't name him. Saville and the accomplice take the kids against their will, probably, they may have offered
them. Now, you said you won't name the accomplice. Have you told the police about this accomplice?
Oh, the police know, there's absolutely no point. I'm not going to the police with any intelligence. I mean, it's above their heads, and they wouldn't be seriously. They're not going to investigate it. And even if they wanted to investigate it, they'd be stopped.
Even if they wanted to have investigated it, or if they wanted to investigate it, they would have been stopped. And Mike Veal, Wiltshire Police, the guy featured in the Sunday Mail today, is making that very claim, which was made by David Icke back in 1998. And even before then, when David was talking around the country, although, as David jokingly says himself, at times back in the early days, it was difficult to get the sort of attention that he would command now. But people were turning up to see him, and he was talking about these things. Now, remember Tim Fortescue. Anybody who's been with me, particularly spending time listening to this programme since it began in 2014... we'll be tired of hearing the Tim Fortescue clip, but it's got to be played over and over and over again. In a documentary made for the BBC in 1995 or 1996, former chief whip Tim Fortescue, he worked for Heath as his whip between 1970 and 1973. Fortescue had this to say.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to the whips and tell them the truth and say, "Now this, I'm in a jam. Can you help?" It might be debt, it might be scandal involving small boys, or any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in, they'd come and ask if we could help. And if we could, we did. And we would do everything we can, because we would store up brownie points. That sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons. Is if we can get a chap out of trouble, then he'll do as we ask forever more.
I never fail to be shocked by that clip, and I've probably heard the clip probably more than 100 times, because Fortescue, the establishment paedophile protector, these audio clips, because it is directly from the establishment mouth. Small boys, we would make it go away for them so they wouldn't have to worry about being arrested. We would get them to do things for us then, you see. Kim tweets, James O'Brien has to be the smuggest, twisted, superior person in media. Low-grade, neuro-linguistic programming, brainwashing, poisonous man, says Kim. Take it you don't like James O'Brien then, Kim. Yes, O'Brien. The thing about these people, you see, you've got to acknowledge people like O'Brien and others. First of all, you've got to acknowledge that they are competent broadcasters. They are competent broadcasters. They speak well. They're very loquacious. They're able to link segments together quite well on a programme. They sound well. That's why they're chosen. You've got to acknowledge that at the very beginning. That's what the alternative media must acknowledge. We've got to become eloquent. We've got to become professional in our delivery. When we do, maybe more people might listen to us collectively. But yes, apart from the fact the guy's a professional broadcaster, he is smug, he is twisted, and he is dreadful. I agree, Kim. I agree. Samba says, the biggest secret was the book that woke me up over 10 years ago. Remains one of the best books I've ever read, says Spirit Samba on Twitter as well. Hi to Joe Nicholson, to Chris Poacher. Chris, thank you for tweeting the Mail story. I've retweeted it there. Hi to Gail as well. To Nana, to Robert Watson. Richie, I can't find the Sunday Mail headline on Google Images. Funny that, says Robert Watson. Thanks, Robert. It might be up there now, Robert. Try now, mate. It'll have been tweeted around the world a few times by now. Ah, he's just tweeted me this second to say, scratch that, Richie, I found it and I am sharing it. Tweet it to me, Robert, and I will retweet it instantaneously. So the Sunday Observer headline today is Chaos for EU Citizens Who Hope to Stay in Britain. The European Union fears millions of its nationals living in the UK will be left stranded in illegal no man's land after the UK leaves the EU. And this is because of weaknesses in the British immigration system. Now, the Observer, the Sunday Observer, obtained a document which claims that the EU are terrified about what's going to happen to all the citizens in the UK. A leaked document drawn up by MEPs on the European Parliament's Employment Committee, okay, says the UK has no population register. In practice, it would be difficult to determine which EU 27 citizens were residing legally in the UK before the Brexit would have taken effect. This is nonsense. This is nonsense. They go on to say if all 3.3 million EU citizens were to initiate procedures aimed at approving the exercise of treaty rights, the administrative system would be overburdened. This is a non-story. It's garbage. Do you know why? Because opinion polls, and to be fair to the Observer, opinion polls published today find that most British people believe that EU nationals living in the UK should be left alone. Leave them alone. They've been here for years. They're working. They're paying taxes. Just let them stay. Only 5% of the public polls said they should be asked to leave. It's a non-bloody issue. In fact, I've pointed out to you before on the programme, there's not much difference in the numbers between EU citizens living here and UK citizens living in Europe. Okay? In fact, there's more EU citizens living here than there are UK citizens in Europe. But there's not much in it. It's only a couple of hundred thousand in the difference. So, you agree to let things be, right? Simple as that. On the European Union, in case you missed it, Tony Blair, warmonger, murderer, psychopath, Rothschild Zionist extraordinaire, got blanket coverage on Friday when he gave a speech urging people to rise up against Brexit. And he talked, did Blair, about a second referendum. Here he is.
Yes, the British people voted to leave Europe, and I agree the will of the people should prevail.
He doesn't.
I accept right now there is no widespread appetite to rethink. But the people voted without knowledge of the terms of Brexit. As these terms become clear, it is their right to change their mind. Our mission is to persuade them to do so. What was unfortunately only dim in our sight before the referendum is now in plain sight. The road we're going down is not simply hard Brexit. It is now Brexit at any cost. Our challenge is to expose relentlessly what that cost is, to show how the decision was based on imperfect knowledge, which will now become informed knowledge, to calculate in easy to understand ways how proceeding will cause real damage to our country, and to build support for finding a way out from the present rush over the cliff's edge.
We want a second referendum, and we're going to have one, says Tony Blair. And this is what I've been warning on this programme. Not that I'm any prophet or expert, but I've been saying it because it's obvious. It was a wonderful thing when people went out and voted to leave on June 23rd. The day after the referendum, the establishment began to obfuscate, to make things difficult, and to talk about how, by the time we're halfway through the Brexit negotiations, people might have already changed their mind. And those 16 and 17-year-olds who couldn't vote will now be able to vote. This is what we're going to hear. How a lawyer and a murderer like Blair can stand in and be interviewed by Pat McFadden, another murderer and another signatory to the mass murder of Iraqis. Murder after the fact, an accessory after the fact, all of these people, all of them, who supported the war in Iraq. How Blair could be allowed to do that. You know, it's too easy for me to be sitting here talking about Blair and who he is. Now, Boris Johnson, the current Foreign Secretary, when it was put to him what Blair had said, this was his response.
Tony Blair, you know, whatever his merits as a former Prime Minister, this is the guy who would have taken our country into the Euro with what would have been catastrophic consequences. This is the guy who dragooned the United Kingdom into the Iraq War on a completely false prospectus, with consequences which foreign ministers here are still trying to deal with. So I respectfully say to Tony Blair, those who call on the British people to rise up against Brexit, I urge the British people to rise up and turn off the TV next time Blair comes on with his condescending campaign.
Yeah, do you know, I'm going to be looking very carefully at the families led by people like Reg Keyes, wonderful guy Reg Keyes, whose son Tom was killed in Iraq in the very early stages of the invasion. The families want to go after Blair in a civil suit. And, you know, I don't believe in the conventional gods of Catholicism, Judaism and Islam, but I pray to the universe that these people do take this bastard, this murdering scumbag, to court and take him for whatever money he has. I really do. Right, couple of interesting stories. We'll leave Blair and the EU alone for a minute. A couple of interesting stories in the Sunday Times. It is a subscription site, so I can't get into them in any depth, but they are interesting. One of the stories on the front page of the Times goes, the headline goes, Revealed New Trojan Horse Plot. And apparently, a head teacher is claiming in Oldham, at a state school in Oldham, that conservative Muslims have been attempting to take over that state school. And basically, this head teacher is saying that she's had to stay away from school a lot of the time and work from home. The Sunday Times says the Trojan horse plot for Muslims to take over the school, presumably through the parent-teacher committees and stuff like that. This sort of thing happened in Birmingham 2 years ago. Now, it might be true. I have no idea. I have no idea. I know how it will be seized upon, but it might be true. That's in the Sunday Times today. And there's also a story in the Sunday Times that you have to just describe as insanity. And that is, St. Paul's lets sixth form girls be boys. That's the headline. A leading girls' school has drawn up a gender identity protocol that will allow the girls to be called by boys' names and to wear boys' clothes if they choose to. Extraordinary. And gender identity and the agenda behind that, we've covered that a lot lately. And I'm sure we will cover that again going forward. Go to davidicke.com/headlines. And where it says search, put gender identity in. There is a avalanche of research and articles on David's website about what's really going on with this gender identity, gender confusion thing. That's in the Sunday Times today. Thought I'd mention that, but I won't get into it in any great detail because we've covered it so much on previous programmes, especially recently. Now, moving on. And thanks for your tweets, by the way, at Richie Allen Show, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Paul tweets, morning, saw David in 2003 but didn't read The Biggest Secret until last year. It is incredible, a perfect tool for making an argument, says Peter. Excuse me, says Paul. Paul Alawi, thanks Paul. Jason tweets, Richie, the best thing about Lincoln beating Burnley yesterday in the FA Cup was hearing on Radio 5 Live a half an hour ago how much it pissed off Alistair Campbell. Yes, party to mass murder, Alistair Campbell. Lawyer-in-chief Alistair Campbell is a Burnley fan. His team were knocked out by a non-league team, whom I believe made history because it's been about 80 years since a non-league team made it to the last eight of the FA Cup, the great old tourney. Great stuff. Well, if it pisses Alistair Campbell off, it can't be a bad thing, can it? Let's move on. US President Donald Trump yesterday had a rally in Florida, and there he launched another very aggressive attack on the media. He told the crowd that the media didn't want to report the truth and had their own agenda. Do you want to hear some of the Donald? Because we've got him. I think we've got him. Have we got the Donald, have we? We have. This is... Put this together this morning. I thought I'd lost the audio. I haven't lost the audio. This is the rally in Florida yesterday. Listen to Trump. This is extraordinary stuff.
I also want to speak to you without the filter of the fake news. The dishonest media, which has published one false story after another, with no sources, even though they pretend they have them, they make them up in many cases. They just don't want to report the truth, and they've been calling us wrong now for 2 years. They don't get it, but they're starting to get it. I can tell you that. They've become a big part of the problem. They are part of the corrupt system. Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson, and Abraham Lincoln, and many of our greatest presidents fought with the media and called them out oftentimes on their lies. When the media lies to people, I will never, ever let them get away with it. I will do whatever I can that they don't get away with it. They have their own agenda, and their agenda is not your agenda. In fact, Thomas Jefferson said, nothing can be believed which is seen in a newspaper. Truth itself, he said, becomes suspicious by being put into that polluted vehicle. That was June 14th, my birthday, 1807. But despite all their lies, misrepresentations, and false stories, they could not defeat us in the primaries, and they could not defeat us in the general election.
Donald Trump yesterday in Florida. Now, this was Trump with a BBC reporter on Thursday, I think. I think it was Thursday, at a press conference at the White House.
Where are you from?
BBC.
Okay. Here's another beauty.
It's a good line. Impartial, free and fair.
Yeah, sure.
Mr. President...
Just like CNN, right?
On the travel ban... we could banter back and forth. On the travel ban, would you accept that that was a good example of the smooth running of government?
Yeah, I do. I do. Let me tell you about the
travel... Were there any mistakes
that? Wait. I know who you are. Just wait. Let me tell you about the travel ban. We had a very smooth rollout of the travel ban. But we had a bad court. We got a bad decision. We had a court that's been overturned. Again, maybe wrong, but I think it's 80% of the time. A lot. We had a bad decision. We're going to keep going with that decision. We're going to put in a new executive order next week.
You've heard all this, right?
But we had a bad decision.
So what I took from... It's probably going to sound very strong. What I took from the clip in Florida, which obviously it's a very unusual thing for an elected president to hold a rally anywhere. These are things that happen in campaign cycles, don't they? In campaign cycles, they don't happen. Generally, you don't see presidents and prime ministers doing that. What I saw yesterday, and the carefully placed people standing behind Trump with carefully placed posters with very carefully thought out slogans, what I saw yesterday was Nuremberg. Fascism. The very definition of fascism. Donald Trump represents the clearest definition of a fascist dictator you will ever come across. And I'm always mindful when we do segments on Trump that idiots will say silly things on YouTube and elsewhere about me or people around me supporting Hillary, which is a massive lie, you see. And the sort of lunatics who support Donald Trump, they have to muddy the waters and they have to misrepresent the views of people like me on programmes like this. Now, my programme isn't the biggest or the most important show in the world. It isn't. It's no bigger, smaller or more or less important than any other programme. But they must muddy the waters and claim that people like me are Hitlery supporters or Sanders supporters. This is utter garbage. We say, those of us who work on this programme, they all work ultimately for the same sinister cabal. All of them. You should vote for none of them. But Trump is in. And Trump is a fascist. And what people need to do, I think, is not to confuse the issues, because it's very easy. I'll give you an example. Yes, the press is concentrated in the hands of the elite, largely 90%, five massive corporations, Disney, Time Warner, General Electric, News Corp. These companies own the media, and it is dreadful, and it is devastating for freedom. And for the betterment of humanity, it is devastating. But despite the elite hegemony over the press, and I know I've said this before, but I'm going to be a bit more, maybe a bit more definitive with what I'm going to say now. Despite the elite hegemony over the press, the elite have not been able to prevent important stories coming out. They cannot, and never have in my opinion, they've never been able to control every journalist and editor, even in their own organisations. They can't. It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? They own these vast swathes of the media, and yet they can't always control their own. And there are many examples of it. Undercover reporting of abuse at care homes, the physical abuse of the elderly, sexual abuse of children, undercover reporting of PIP assessment hearings where the disabled are being abused and wrongfully sanctioned and benefits taken away. The journalists undercover who uncovered even paedophilia in the church. The journalists who printed stories about David Cameron and severed pigs' heads. Kinkora Boys Home in Belfast. I could go on and on and on. The elites have never been able to totally control their own property. So don't call me a hypocrite. I don't support the editorial policy of CNN, C-SPAN, ESPN, Fox News, the BBC, Sky Channel 4. I know what those organisations were set up to do. To brainwash and to acquiesce you and me to the desires of the elite cabal. But they don't work very well. It does largely, I suppose, keep people dumbed down and, you know, half asleep to what's going on. But within those corporate structures are men and women still doing good stuff. Why is that? Because I think fundamentally people are decent. And good journalists want to uncover corruption and malfeasance wherever they can find it. And you've got to remember as well, before Trump and before the term fake news came into our lives, remember this. World leaders were at the United Nations talking about how the discussion of 9/11 and other issues was a form of non-violent extremism, and that might lead to somebody becoming radicalised. We had the Leveston inquiry exposing bad behaviour, criminal behaviour of some editors. Why did we have the Leveston inquiry? It looked brilliant at the time, didn't it? It looked like a great thing. Yeah, they shouldn't have been listening to Millie Dowler's phone. They shouldn't have been eavesdropping on the victims of crime. They shouldn't have been doing all of that. That was good, right? But now, since Leveston, we've had Hugh Grant, and more importantly, we've had Max Mosley, who's single-handedly trying to destroy the print media in the United Kingdom. And his body, his group, the regulatory body he set up, which is called Impress, is the only one backed by the government. And they want to force newspapers, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but it's important. They want to force newspapers to pay the costs of anyone who sues them, even whether the complaint is upheld or not. Think about that. You can sue a newspaper because you don't like something that's in there, because it might impact on you. And this group set up by Mosley wants the newspapers to pay your costs even if your complaint is not upheld. Imagine it. This is insane, people. connect the dots, as David says. Listen to it. Last week we told you about the Law Commission proposing that a journalist or whistleblower with secret information could go to prison for 14 years. What's that about? Well, I'll tell you what that's about. You probably don't know. I'm not suggesting you're stupid, but going into the finer details of these sorts of things, it's my job to do that on your behalf, he says. And I don't want that to sound patronising, because it isn't. It's my bloody job. Now, Section 40 of the Crimes and Courts Act in 2013, that's the act that was written in response to the Leveson inquiry. And they said at the time, you see, connect the dots. It's a false flag operation. They said legal remedies should be more readily available, easily available, to ordinary members of the public and to people who can't afford high-priced barristers. That sounds brilliant, doesn't it? Who could argue with that when it's phrased like that? Mr. and Mrs. Joe Murphy, if the Mirror says something about them, they should have easier access to go after the Mirror. And if the Mirror are in the wrong, great, the Mirror will have to be sanctioned. But Mr. and Mrs. Joe Soap or Joe Murphy can't do it at the moment because of the prohibitive costs of barristers. That sounds brilliant. Now, that's been passed into law in the United Kingdom, Section 40 of the Crimes and Courts Act, but it hasn't yet been enacted. It's not been made active by the government. Max Mosley wants this to be acted upon. The tabloids are scared to death of it, quite rightly. Quite rightly. And what they're doing is they are blackmailing the tabloids into joining the state regulator. Because they're saying, if you don't join the state regulator, if you don't join Max Mosley in press, we will trigger this clause. And if we do trigger it, you will then have to pay the costs of claimants against you, even if those claimants are unsuccessful. They are blackmailing the media in this country into joining a state regulator. Now, I've not made any notes on this. I've got a couple of bullet points, so I'm always mindful of the fact that I might make a complete balls of explaining this. So let me lay it out again in black and white. The government are saying, if you don't join the state regulator whom we approve of, because there's only one state-approved regulator, that is Impress, which was set up by Max Mosley. If you don't go along with them and sign up to their rules, we will make active the full Section 40, and in future, you'll have to pay the costs of people who are unsuccessful, even if they are unsuccessful, when they come after you. So now think about that, and think about the Donald Trump rhetoric, and tell me, look me in the eye and tell me, that's a coincidence. It ain't a coincidence. There is an elite war going on right now against their own media. Sounds mad, but as I said, they've never been able to control their own media entirely. Trump is doing his bit, constantly shouting down journalists and calling them liars. He threatened the BBC journalist on Thursday. "I know who you are," he said. What did that mean? It didn't mean, "Oh, I know who you are. I know who you are. I know you're from the BBC." It was said with malice. I would say malice aforethought. "I know who you are." It's extraordinary. And those rallies in Florida, which was all about the media. That's why I said Nuremberg. And does the alternative media who has backed Trump, do they really believe after Trump and the people who are pulling his strings eliminate the media? Take the media out of DC. Allow people like Trump and his successors to write executive orders and to sign those executive orders into law with no input whatsoever from the media. Does the alternative media in the United States really believe that they won't go after them then? That they're going to be exempt? What fools they are, eh? What fools they are. 4.5 minutes to the top of the hour. This is Sunday View on davidicke.com and Fab Radio 2. I'm going to finish with a story. And it's a story that was covered on Friday by everybody. A little girl wrote a letter to Google. And Google responded to her. Google, or Google, however you say it. I say Google. Google. Little girl wrote a letter to Google. They responded. This became a news story covered by all the networks. You think I'm joking? I'm not. This is deadly serious. This is the sort of thing which goes unnoticed in news program broadcasts. Goes largely unnoticed. Nobody notices this sort of thing. But people have to start waking up to it. This is from Radio 5 Live. The presenter is a woman called Claire McDonald. This is from Friday morning's programme. Listen.
Now, it's at 5 minutes, 8:05 live breakfast. When 7-year-old Chloe Bridgewater applied to Google for a job, the last thing she expected was a reply. But that's exactly what she got. And it came directly from Sundar Pichai, the technology giant's CEO. We can talk now to Chloe and her dad, Andy Bridgewater. Morning to the two of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning, Chloe. Tell us how this all started then, Chloe. What did you ask your dad?
If I could write a letter to Google so I might be able to get a job when I'm older.
Okay, and you asked him, didn't you? You said, what's work like and where would you like to work? And what did he say to you?
Google.
And did he say why he'd want to work at Google?
No.
No. So when you looked at the pictures he showed you of Google and their offices in America, what did you like about what you saw?
The slides.
Oh, God, they've got slides there, haven't they? What else?
You're thinking, dear listener, aren't you? You're thinking, you're fucking shitting me, right? You're absolutely shitting me. This is not a national news channel covering a letter from a child to Google. Surely there's more to this. There's got to be something. Did the guy write a rude letter back? Did he call her a fucking idiot? Did he... What's the story here, right? It's got to be building to something.
What else have they got there?
Ball pits.
What? That sounds like a really fun place to work. And I hear you're quite interested in robots and technology as well.
Yeah.
So that would be a great place to work, wouldn't it? And so you wrote this letter, didn't you? What did you write in your letter?
If I could have a job at Google.
And you got a letter back, didn't you? And what did it feel like when you got a letter back from the boss?
Wow.
Really good.
Oh, the boss wrote back, eh?
I mean, this all started, as Chloe has so brilliantly told us, you know, a general question from a child to their parent, you know, what's work, what's it like, where would you like to work? And clearly Google is top of your list.
Hold the front pages, little girl writes to Google, gets a letter back.
Your list.
My job's a little bit boring for a 7-year-old. So she asked me, where would I love to work? And I said, oh, Google would be pretty cool, Chloe. They've got some really cool things there. So we had a look and... I think she got hooked after seeing all the pictures of all the cool stuff there.
And you were a very patient father, weren't you? Because when you started talking about work, you said, well, you know, if this is how it works. If you want to work somewhere, then you have to fill in an application. You took her through the whole process, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, she's only 7, so she doesn't know the process. She didn't know what application meant at the time. So we decided to go and write a letter and see where we go from there. We never expected, firstly, a reply and then a response. As we've seen currently, it's just gone a bit crazy, to be honest.
What did he say in the letter then?
Chloe, do you want to say what he said in the letter?
He said he wanted
to need to work hard at school.
It's painful, isn't it?
He wanted to work for me.
God love the child,
I'm
by the way.
You know what? That might just happen.
You heard the mention of robots, didn't you? A few minutes ago, you heard the mention of robots there, right?
It might just happen. He wanted to work for you. That must have made... How did that make you feel?
Good.
Listen, it's been wonderful talking to
wonderful.
You. Thank you so much for talking us through your story.
Wonderful.
That's Chloe and her dad, Andy Bridgewater.
Wonderful stuff. Let me just tell you what happened there, because I have a lot of experience working in commercial media at the very highest level. Google... took that letter, which I believe was genuine, from the child because she had a conversation with her father. Google sent that out to the... I suppose it initially gets out to the what are called the wires. So you're talking about the big organisations, Reuters, AFP, Associated Press. They, in turn, then send it to their puppets, which are Sky News, BBC, Channel 4, etc. And they, whether they like it or not, have to make that into a news story. That girl's father was on Sky News, was on BBC Television News and BBC Radio News on Friday, talking about his little girl writing a letter to Google, where it's a cool place because they're developing the robots there, eh? And they have slides and all sorts of fun things. Do I need to remind you that Google and DARPA are interchangeable? They are anyway in terms of the staff, Regina Duggan and other people moving between them. If you haven't read the Phantom Self by David, I'd recommend you read Transphantomism. It's outstanding. They are leading the agenda to get every single one of us connected to the cloud, to have implantable technology rolled out for children all over the world, to have us hooked up to the internet 24 hours a day. And this is unbelievable propaganda. And it is absolutely incredible that the mainstream media in this country, all of them, ran with that story on Friday. Very little talk about that. Very few people noticed that story. Very few people noticed it. But there you go. That's what's going on. Staggering, isn't it, really? Imagine. If I'd have brought a story like that to my presenter when I was producing, when I started out, I might have been fired for being an idiot. That's the end of the programme. We've gone over time. I've got to get out because I've got to get on podcast. I've got to get on YouTube. Thank you for listening to Sunday View. Thanks for all your tweets, by the way. All of you. Even the ones I didn't read, I do appreciate them. We will be back live tomorrow at 7 p.m. GMT with Monday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com. In the meantime, for more on these stories, go to davidicke.com/headlines. And why not have fabradiointernational.com playing in the background? Two wonderful channels there. Channel 2, the Richie Allen repeats from last week, but Channel 1, programme after programme after programme, music, television, films, comedy, completely original stuff. It's great. Thanks for listening. Look after yourselves. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Take care of yourselves and one another. I'll see you tomorrow at the usual time, 7 p.m. GMT. Thanks for listening. Bye now.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.